whenever my world falls apart. I never lose hope or lose heart. Whatever the form of the storm that may brew, not with you to lean on, darling's you.
Hello and welcome to The Original Cast, a podcast about original cast albums and the people who love them. I'm Patrick Flynn. My guest today is a podcaster, best-selling author, and, as far as I know, the only podcaster quoted in a Pulitzer Prize-winning musical. It's Justin McElroy, everybody.
Hi, everyone. What a pleasure it is to be here. Hello. Thank you for having me here. I cannot wait to sing the entirety of the Who's Tommy, which is what I understand the premise of this podcast to be. I hope I'm allowed to look at the lyrics.
There are quite a few of them. Yes, we're talking about the Who's Tommy.
He ain't got no distractions. Can't hear those buzzing bells. Can't see those lights flashing. Plays by sense of smell. Always gets a replay and never tilts at all. That death of a blind kid. Some plays a mean pinball.
I think for people of our age, we're about the same age, I believe, and this musical comes at a very formidable time when you're 12, 13 years old. And I was also thinking today that it was a really interesting moment when in the early 90s, we were really into the 60s for like a couple of years. And this sort of falls right into that vein. But before I get any deeper, I will ask you, how did the Who's Tommy come into your life?
So I actually encountered it for the first time. Oh my gosh. At a church camp, a bunch of people sitting around a fire, you know, the campfire. Mm-hmm. And somebody started playing Pinball Wizard on their guitar. And I was telling my parents about it. And my dad was like, oh, yeah, it's a band called The Who. I was like, oh. So it's a this is a pre-existing song. The guy didn't write it for the campfire. Yeah. A little bit of a disappointment, right, for sure. But he told me this idea that it is a concept album, which I had not. I was not really familiar with the concept at that time. The concept of a concept album. And after he told me that it had this like pinball angle, I was already like super into video games. So it's like a pretty short jump over mm-hmm. to getting excited about like somebody who's good at pinball. I 12 or 13 at the time. And then so I discovered it. My parents got me the double album of the Who's Tommy's, like two CDs. I still mm-hmm. remember the cover is like it's like the blue cross
like a lattice.
Blue lattice. Yeah. That's the word. So, and I wore that out, man. I listened to that one all the time. And then the musical just happened to be being produced like at that same window that I sort of organically found the record itself. The other like weird connective tissue here is that Michael Cerveris, who originated the role of Tommy on Broadway, is from Huntington, mm-hmm. where I live. So there would, and the, not the original Captain Walker, but the second Captain Walker on Broadway, Mark McVeigh, is also from Huntington.
Oh.
So there was like two Huntingtonians in this show at the same time. And so to me, it was like this confluence of stuff all sort of like coming together. It's also worth noting that and this is like less common now these days, I think, thank goodness, but as the kid growing up in West Virginia, the only opportunity you get to see a part of a show is the Tonys. Mm-hmm. So like the Tony Awards were a big deal at our house. And the Who's Tommy from the Tonys the year it was produced, it's extremely good. In about 4 minutes, they get through like six of the best mm-hmm. songs in the show. And it's like all over the place. It doesn't stay anywhere for more than like 15 seconds. It's so kinetic. And it's so wild. Michael Cerveris is like all over the place. And it showed really well. And that is, I'll say, Patrick, the only time I've seen any of Tommy perform, like I've never seen the show ever.
Oh, okay.
Because that's like, you know, it like that was my exposure to it. So a lot of this like cast album and stuff was just like kind of playing it out in my head mm-hmm. as a kid. But anyway, that's an extremely long answer to how did I find this album.
But it's very, I think it's endemic, I think, of this show for a lot of people, like, again, who were teenagers starting high school at this period, that it was just, it was this big, flashy, colorful, kinetic thing that had this unusual connection to our parents, even if they weren't theater people. That was right. The big thing that I remember, is that this was the first musical that a lot of theater kids got their parents to take them to see excitedly. Like, everybody went to see Les Mis on tour because it was legally required.
To, right? Yeah. And it helped that it didn't sound like Broadway. You know, I didn't have a theater household. We became like a theater.
Oh, that
family.
Surprises me. You didn't have a theater household growing up? Just from the number amount of theater you guys bring on your shows. Like, that's really
well, not until, like, it wasn't my parents. It was like me getting involved with like theater when I was in second or third grade. And then my parents like being drawn into it and doing it like with us. So like by this point, you know, I don't think they were necessarily like directing stuff. Like my parents were not huge Broadway people, but this was definitely one I remember my dad being into, because it's like it was the Who, right? So he had the familiarity and stuff.
And had seen the movie, I'm sure, and it was all very
Probably, yeah
experience with that. Though it is actually, this is a good point too, because the plot synopsis is a little different from the show to the movie.
Such as it is. As much as you can have a plot synopsis of a concept album.
Well, that's it. So I was going to ask, I usually ask my guests to summarize the plot, and I do want to get into that a little bit. But I first want to ask you, when did you become aware of the plot of Tommy, and how did that understanding maybe evolve and grow as you go from the concept album to the Broadway album?
Patrick, I had no freaking clue, man. It's like, it's really like fill in the blanks. I didn't have a book. Like,
right,
I had this, I had this album. Like, that is all that I knew to inform. I had the liner notes, kids liner notes.
It's where
I had
all
the liner notes that sort of like explain the synopsis of the show, but it's also like, by definition, a sort of abstract plot wise, and because I think that it's as open to interpretation as anything. There are some basic beats, but again, it was it's pretty open ended plot.
Sure. Do you think you could give the folks a taste if they don't know what the plot of
Tommy
is?
Boy named Tommy.
Good start.
Great. His dad, it goes off to war. Captain Walker, and he is a prisoner of war, and his mom has an affair with somebody, and Tommy sees this affair, and sees the fight that they have about the affair, and I think in the show, I think the dad, Captain Walker, shoots the boyfriend, and they basically tell Tommy, you didn't hear this. You didn't see this. This didn't happen. And it basically puts him into a catatonic shock, I guess you would say, in which he remains. He won't talk to anybody. He won't interact with anyone. He is taken advantage of by an uncle who has, you know, a pretty upsetting song. He's got another family member that bullies him. But basically, he goes to a club that has a pinball table. He plays pinball, and he's instantly, like, astounding. And no one can figure it out. I mean, they set him up in front of it just basically to pass the time. And he is instantly so good at it that it sort of, like, inspires kind of a cult following, a religion, if you will, of people who, like, want him to teach him the way of it. And it's finally like Tommy breaks through the catatonia and is able to like communicate with people, but wears a special get up to like play pinball still without his senses to like show that he can do it. Right. And then things get like even more sort of ephemeral towards the end, but that is like the basics.
Yeah, that hits the high points. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's the, my wife and I were just in New York to see some shows and talking about bringing up my son, who is 13 to come see some stuff. And I thought, they're bringing back Tommy. I was like, well, he can go see Tommy. There's nothing in Tommy that would be too upsetting, except for the molestation scene. Never mind. We're not going to go see Tommy this
Yeah,
next
and it's
time
and
through.
like honestly, it's from a different time,
Sure.
right?
Right.
Obviously, but it is, if you haven't heard it, it's like gotta be the jauntiest song about molestation. It's like too jaunty to feel
Yeah.
appropriate. It feels bad. Like just like
Yeah.
it's not even like this is a tough subject that we like the show also like glances off of it in a way
Yes.
that like I think in a modern story has to stop the narrative. Like it has to be
Yes.
like, never mind about everything else that was happening. This is what this has to be about. You can't just like glance off of it, I
Yeah.
guess.
Well, because on the album, on the concept album, it is just a little ditty, and it's just sung. It's like 2.5 minutes, and it just flies through, and then it goes on.
I'm your wicked Uncle Ernie. I'm glad you won't see or hear me as I fiddle about, fiddle about, fiddle about. Your mother left me here to mind you. Now I'm doing what I want to. Fiddling about, fiddling about, fiddle about.
At least in the cast album, they take the tempo to half, they progress it a little bit. But I'm re I know, right.
I'm your wicked Uncle Ernie. I'm glad you won't see or hear me as I fiddle about, fiddle about, fiddle about. Your mother left me here to mind you. Now I'm doing what I want to. Fiddling about, fiddling about, fiddle about.
But I'm really interested to see what they do with it in the new production, because like you say, it can't be ignored. It,
What's
you know.
tough about it is it's not what the show is about.
Right.
Like, it's not about that. This event is not what like triggers any of the story stuff. Like,
Right.
it's not what triggers the catatonia. It's not what triggers any of it. So it's like, do you, but cutting it feels weird. Like, I don't know. It's just like, I don't know.
Well, because
Best of
there's
luck to him.
right,
I don't have no
exactly, yeah,
idea.
right. They didn't ask me, and I'm glad they didn't, frankly.
Right.
Well, because in the show, it's kind of this like there's this pattern of behavior. The way they craft it in the show, it isn't like this on the concept album, but the way they craft it in the show is it's like the people who treat Tommy badly in Act One, which is Cousin Kevin and Uncle Ernie, are the ones who are most exploitative of him in Act Two. Where it's
Right.
like Cousin Kevin is like in charge of his security detail, and Uncle Ernie like is his agent a little bit. It's kind of weird, but and it's unclear. And so it is this sort of like, we know that these people have always been exploiting him. He maybe does, maybe doesn't, and that's sort of
Yeah.
a tension. But like you say, it isn't, it there's no head, it doesn't come to a head. He doesn't have like
Right.
flashback
You
realizations
don't
about
sit there is
anything.
not like a and you're going to jail.
Right.
Like you don't.
Yeah. And in fact, Uncle Ernie gets kind of like Cousin Kevin kind of gets a bad send off, but Uncle Ernie really doesn't. He's just kind of
Yeah.
there at the
Yeah.
finale, which isn't, again, ideal, shall we say,
Yeah.
response to that sequence. But it is, you know, it is of a piece, like to really think about the fact that this show, as concept albums go, is even loose, more loosely plotted than most. It is a very,
Yes.
very loosely connected. And I don't know, do you know the story of how Pinball Wizard apparently got written in the first place? How that
No, I
plot?
don't think I do.
So apparently, the legend is that they had this idea for this, as it is said in the show, deaf, dumb, and blind kid named Tommy and his experiences in the world. And but they didn't have a hit for the album. And then they were supposed to perform a show where this rock critic was coming. And apparently this guy really liked pinball. So Pete Townsend decided to write a song about like the character being good at pinball, just like get a good review. And the show did get a good review after that song dropped in. I don't know if that story's true or not, but I think what's true about it is the capricious nature in which these songs were written, crafted, and then added probably as plot points later
Yeah,
into a
it's very
larger
much
narrative.
like the They Might Be Giants have a like a song called Fingertips that is actually
Yeah, it's like
18
different
short
songs.
songs
Right.
that you was designed. The gag is supposed to be if you have the CD on shuffle, You would listen to a full song, and then there'd be like this 10-second weird nothing.
Right.
But fans, since it was released, have tried to like read in a narrative to these beats.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think this is that. It's not that level.
Right.
But it's definitely like you bring some of the story to it, which
sure.
is why I think it doesn't matter that much that it's changed in the play and the movie and whatever, mm-hmm. because it's like the story, such as it is, it doesn't even function like a traditional narrative to like, because you don't have a protagonist that necessarily like wants something early
right.
on. He is just sort of a victim of circumstance for a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't like where he ends up, but it's not necessarily a frustration with his situation when it begins, right? We don't get
right.
any insight into him. He's kind of a cipher in that way. Honestly, what I feel like the closest parallel for Tommy is Joseph in the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. Because Joseph doesn't necessarily have a goal in that show. It's always
right.
been my beef with it. There's not really a point, right?
Right.
I mean,
right.
he's like, any dream will do is both a hit single and a thesis statement for this show. We're just like, I don't know, some things happen and then we go out to Schlotsky's afterwards.
Right.
Like there's, I don't know. Tommy feels like that to me, where it's like the story is happening sort of around him and to him,
mm-hmm.
but he's not necessarily like a protagonist we can necessarily like root for. He's more pulling like symbolic weight than anything else.
It's the kind of show, and these shows appear a lot, but they don't usually work this well, where there's a lot of ideas and there's a lot of thematic things are connected. Like you can draw lines, but they're never really developed very much. If they were developed anymore, it would be too much. And if they were developed any less, it wouldn't function. Because there's this whole thing with the mirror, for example,
right.
in Tommy, where he like saw the murder in a mirror. And then the way that, and he's always drawn to the mirror. And then when he's older, his mother, in order to break him out of his catatonic state, smashes the mirror in a song titled Smash the Mirror. And that frees him. But it's never developed beyond that. Everything I just told you is all the beats you get in the audience. He loves the mirror. He smashes the mirror, or she smashes the mirror. It breaks his trance. Never discussed, never addressed. Never theorized on, like, well, I wonder what it was about the mirror, you know, that brought it all together.
I'm saying this as kind of I fear that this sounds like a knock. I'm not necessarily.
Oh, yeah, no.
I do mean that with Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. I don't mean it with Tommy, because I think that the reason it works is that you do instinctively understand it doesn't have a message, but it's definitely about something. Like, it's putting you in a thematic headspace where you're thinking about fame. You're thinking about like introspection and like people who are so deep inside their own selves, they don't see the world around them and what we make of people like that. Like, so it's definitely about stuff. It's just like, as a narrative, it feels more like almost ballet sort of, you know,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, kind of
like long form sketch. It's like connect.
Yeah,
like it's a
yeah,
bunch
yeah.
of stuff that is connected, but it's not like, it's not a if but then plot. It's not
exactly,
you know, there's
right.
very little actual cause and effect throughout it. It is just sort of like this happens, and then there's a sequence about that, and then this happens, and there's a sequence about that.
Yeah.
And that's why I say that like it usually doesn't work. Usually when you have shows like that, they do not work, because there's nothing holding it together. It sort of
mm-hmm.
eventually gets too long or too boring or something. And
mm-hmm.
that's really where I think the secret sauce of this show comes in, which is the score. This is like,
sure.
it's without a doubt, I think Pete Townsend's best work. Maybe Who's Next has more like out great songs on an album, but like it really is a really, really good score. And that'll get you through if you've got enough of that connective tissue. You put those two things together and you're on your way.
Oh, 100%. I mean, it's like there's a lot of certified banger on this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that like I sometimes wish that we had seen like more of a, I know he's done other work, but like more work in like the more traditional narrative Broadway sense, because the one original song, I Believe My Own Eyes, I think he's really, really good too. Like I think it's
mm-hmm.
really good. So it's got a ton of great songs. I think that it is helped also by first the orchestration of the way they bring the songs to life. It's rock, but it's like this sort of symphonic rock.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me of like whenever you hear, there's great recordings of like the Scorpions playing with the London Symphony Orchestra. And it's like the swells of the music are supported by strings, but you still have the guitars in the mix. Mm-hmm. So they like keep the heart of the songs, I think, is very cool. And do a good job of splitting up the voices and the sound to bring those to life. Michael Cerveris also sounds like Pete yeah. Townsend playing guitar.
Yes.
Like I should say, like, I know Michael Cerveris, personally, like, dad is friends with Michael Cerveris because, you know, again, from Huntington, we've met. We're not like close buds or anything.
Sure.
By the way, if you don't know Michael Cerveris from this, you may know him as the Observer from the right. show Fringe, was another big role of his. He was in The Tick.
Yes. That's right.
He's done a lot of other stuff, but
I think listeners probably know him best of this podcast would know him from Fun Home, probably.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or Booth and Assassins.
Yeah. He won a Tony for both those performances. Yeah.
He's a very nice dude. So I say this with some bias, but I think he sounds frigging like the voice that he had, the tone, the timbre of his voice.
Yeah.
Sounds like a guitar to me. Like and the places that they brought in a chorus, I think hit really well, surprisingly. Like,
oh, okay.
Not the choral numbers, but like the way that the
vocal support comes in, like
listening
for that.
To you, mm-hmm. I mm-hmm. get they bring like a chorus of voices in at a time when it needs to be like even more uplifting. They really build the energy nicely, I think, with that.
It is a very, like, unlike a lot of, I think, albums turned into shows, which I've seen various, you know, successful versions of, it really feels like they took this one down to the studs and then rebuilt it for the stage instead of mm-hmm. just, because they also, I mean, on a very basic level, like you say, they added a song, they reordered other songs, they added reprises, he wrote little new sections and things like mm-hmm. the overture to give it a little more of a stage feel to it. And
that probably is a big superpower too, having someone with that taste level, like mm-hmm. to have involved that deeply. I think is a huge, I know he was involved. I remember him talking about the choreography of the show because he said he didn't want any. He said the most I would want is like choreographed walking. But which is funny, it's an interesting staging that they sure. ended up with as a result of that. There is not yes. a lot of what traditional dancing, I would say, right. like dancing for dancing's sake.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think his involvement is huge.
It is one of the Tonys the show went in its original, I should say, was for the choreography, which was so that gives you the sort of sense of how it all eventually ended up, I think, in that regard, too.
Yeah.
Because I remember, I mean, this from an aesthetic standpoint, again, being 13, the haircuts, the clothing, like all felt very amazing to me.
Yeah.
I absolutely had Cousin Kevin's haircut when I was in high school. And like a lot of people did. And I also remember we used to do I don't know much of the choreography, but I remember in Pinball Wizard, they do this thing where they like hold their jackets out back behind, like they grab the tails of their jackets and they hold them out. That used to be a go-to move in community theater for a little while, but we never had, it occurred to, I think, somebody that like the jackets for that show were clearly custom made, you know, to do that effect. And your regular sports coat that you're putting on to do the mousetrap isn't gonna necessarily like stretch work as far back
same way,
as you possibly needed to. But these are the things you learn as a theater kid.
It is cool. I know that this is about cast recordings, so stagings probably you shouldn't be.
Oh, we
talk
about
all
this,
but
stuff. Yeah.
They bring a cool simplicity to the design too, at least judging by what they did at the Tonys. The costuming, it's still like Tommy is dressed in all white, right? It's just playing into the iconography of him. On the pinball table is not a pinball table, you know, it is like the outline, the wireframe of a pinball table. It's cool.
Yeah, and it's a lot of scaffolding and a lot of projection backgrounds, a lot of minimalist feel to it. I'm surprised you never saw it on tour or anything like that. Is that not like I don't know, even when you were a kid, where were the nearest Broadway tours that you could kind of go to as a kid?
Cincinnati, Columbus, were the two like that I probably could have made it to. It would have been a harder sell to get up there back when this would have been touring, I think, to try to get my parents to go. I don't even know if it came to Cincinnati and Columbus. Not
Not
everything
everything makes
does, you know.
it. But you obviously really stuck with theater, and your whole family did from the
Yeah,
sort
for
of
sure.
like point on out, and got very involved in community theater, which I know you're still involved with.
Technically, my major's in acting and directing, so I did theater all through college and had illusions of wanting to be an actor, delusions maybe of wanting to be an actor. So I was like, I've always kind of been involved with it. My wife and I are again like directing theater and performing in theater again. Now that our kids are a little bit older. So that's been fun to return to. We did SpongeBob SquarePants last year. We're doing Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. The West End and Broadway production just became available, so we're doing that in the summer. So stay
That's
involved with it for sure.
What is it about theater? I mean, you seem to be the first one in your family to kind of get grabbed by it. Now you're the oldest child, obviously, so where you go, people tend to follow as a fellow oldest child. But what was it about being in theater that you loved so much when you were little?
Oh man, the attention, really. I mean, I just love the attention. I wish there was a longer answer, but I've done a lot of work in therapy to accept that.
That is
It was just no, my dad was always he wasn't like a big theater guy, but he loved like comedy and performance and like really we grew up on like Monty Python, Kids in the Hall, MST3K, like a lot of like comedy type stuff, but like that sort of entertainment, I guess, was always something that was sort of in our blood growing up. So we were drawn to it as a result of that. And honestly, like, it was the extracurricular we did because, like, we weren't sports guys despite dad's best efforts. And I didn't even consciously sort of choose it as a major, really. It's weird. I have no memory of doing that. I just sort of was a theater major. I don't know. I must have had the wrong conversation with somebody. And when you're young, you don't remember why you decided to do stuff. But
Sure. He had to sign
yeah,
a
it
piece
was.
of paper somewhere, but probably to get
You
that
think, right?
right at some
You would
point,
think it's
right?
not just an
You
oral
went to a, I mean, you went
contract.
to a big school, right? Like it's got,
A
like they
real,
have.
I mean, it's not big, it's a real one. It's a real with the regular rules and stuff. Not like a, yeah.
An accredited educational institution, like
Correspondence
you,
course or
right?
something, yeah.
Yeah, it's not, you know.
But yeah, I now at this point I like it's not about the attention because I get attention from my podcast and I no longer need theater for that. I like having a communal art very much appeals to me. I like the idea that you can make something. I don't really love making stuff in a vacuum by myself. Like all my podcast work and that the other work is like with other people. I like working that way. And the idea that we can have young people that like don't necessarily have an outlet otherwise to like show them how to be theater artists and to express themselves that way is very appealing to me. So that is what keeps me involved with it. Also we do summer theater, so it's a nice way to get out of the house because
Sure.
otherwise I'm pretty much a home,
Yeah.
I work out of my house, so I'm homebody. So that's
Good
nice, but
to get out and get rolling around. No, that's really great. It is a it's an interesting little thing, the theater, and it doesn't seem to ever, I mean, you obviously left it for a while, but it seems to always find its way back to everybody who gets involved in it from the jump. But it is a like, I wonder how at with the point when you started listening to Tommy, did that then bring you into other Did you start getting into cast albums, or was it still sort of like and
For
shift that
sure,
way?
for sure.
That was the so it
Tommy
was.
was the first one. Now tell me the second. You'll know it. You know.
I know. Is it
You
contemporary
know.
to 93, or is it just Les Mis?
I
Is
mean,
that the
it's
answer?
like if my first one was the Who's Tommy,
Tommy.
and I was born in 1980.
Sure. Okay, so was I.
Is Rent? Is Rent?
Oh, it was
Rent was the
Rent.
next.
Oh, that makes
Rent
sense.
is Rent.
Okay.
It was like
Gotcha.
what's the gag in Wayne's World? If you lived in the suburbs, you were issued it with a box of Tide when you moved in. Like about Peter Frampton comes alive.
Right.
That was the, every you had to have the double
Had to
disc
have
Rent.
that, right.
But yeah, that was one. See, Rent was one that was more communal. All the theater kids were into Rent.
Oh, everybody was into Rent.
I was a
Yeah.
little bit of an island with Tommy. Like it was more like my pet thing
Sure.
that I was into. But yeah, that was a big one for me. Like the ones that I was into, I would wear out. That was definitely one I listened to. I mean, I wore out Les Mis. I wore out not fan. I like three or four songs on Phantom. Probably the one I've listened to the most, no, definitely is Parade. Parade, I've listened to, like, have not seen it. I've not seen Parade again
Got it.
for the sea above, but
Sure.
that is the one that I have listened to probably the most.
Wow. So, but that's a big jump over to like there's like the ones you're mentioning at the beginning are these, you know, double album, massive mega theater operatic pieces to them. And even Les Mis, though it is much more MT than rock and roll, has still all the synthesizers and big sort of, you know, explosive moments to it. But the leap to the score for Parade for me is a little intense from that kind of
It's interesting that you say that because I don't think of to me it was always about performing. Like it was not, I would never like listen. It was like what songs would I want to stage in my dining room,
Okay,
right? So
sure.
for me it started in probably would have been early on in college, looking for like individual pieces to sing for audition classes and finding songs for New World, and getting like really into that. And then that just kind of leapfrogging into just these great like songs for singers to, belt to yourself, that kind of shower music.
Sure.
I think is a really, a lot of Jason R. Brown stuff is very great for that. And it's just fun to sing
Yes.
with. So that was always the ideal for me.
So even then, I mean, even back though in high school or early college, that was directing was something you were kind of leaning towards. You just sort of
No,
saw
just
these things,
like
or
pretending to perform
oh, I
for
see.
myself.
Staging
Yeah,
yourself in the dining room. I
staging
got
my
you.
brain.
Gotcha.
Why? Yes, right,
I
exactly.
gotcha. How would?
Imagining the fantastic costumes that I'd be wearing and my adoring fans
Yes,
chanting
obviously.
my name.
Right. As you belt all the wasted time across
As I
across the
do,
living
as
room.
I inspirationally perform both roles in I Believe My Own Eyes, both the father and the mother. Yes, folks, he
He
does
can.
them both. He's a double threat. He does the mom and the dad part. And is he Tommy too? He
Yeah,
is.
right.
He
Well, in
is.
that song, Tommy doesn't see he could be because he doesn't do
Is
anything.
he Uncle Ernie? He is not. He skips
Ah.
that song. He does not love to perform Fiddle About for his cats. That
And they
one's a
appreciate him for
skip-a-rooney.
it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah, no,
Do you have
that's a sk
do you have a segment on this show that's like, what's the one you always skip?
We have talked about
What?
it a lot. No, we've yeah, that we've talked about skippable songs. It's a big topic among people who listen to cast albums. What's the one that you just sort of like instinctively reach for the next button on? And is Fiddle About your
That's Fiddle About's not fun to listen. We're not enjoying that. Like, it's
Yeah.
not fun to listen to that one.
No, it's not.
Yeah. I don't for me it's the big like Tommy songs that I find myself like
Like Amazing Journey and
Amazing Journey, Pinball Wizard,
Sensation.
Sensei.
It's
God,
a great song, isn't
this show is stacked, man.
Oh,
Like there
yeah.
is so many freaking good songs in this. I even forget, like, there's a lot of the Acid
There's a
Queen,
whole,
I
I was gonna
mean,
say, there's a
mention
whole
like
section where he like get he and his dad go off to see this woman who's gonna cure him somehow, we're not sure, and she's really just doing it for heroin money, it seems, in the stage,
yeah.
and it's a very odd long sequence in sort of the end of act one of this show, which works. You know, I say it's just like it, that's the other, I mean, as you pointed, like these things, these aren't criticisms. This is like just the way the show kind of is. And there's this moment it takes to meander Eyesight to the Blind and then the Acid Queen, both of which are great songs, but like, what, why was his dad going, what was that, how did that happen, guys?
Why did we end up here? Kind of moved off of that pretty quick, huh?
Right.
Seems like anything but the uncle? No? All right.
No, all right, fine. Okay. Just moving along. And then right after that, he learns to play pinball. So I guess it was, there was something in there, you know?
He must learn something. I mean, that's, I think it's cool when things that are so singular can succeed, because I think that makes more space for other things to be weird, to be individual and succeed. Like, I can't think of any other shows that work in the way that this show works. Like, sure. There's a lot of it that shouldn't work. It's like, I don't know. High Fidelity the Musical. Like, was this a good choice?
Right.
But this one works.
Well, and I think one of the reasons it works is, like you say, though, that like, while the Tommy doesn't have an I Want song and a journey in that same traditional sense, his parents do. His parents are kind of the unintentional through line that get us emotionally. Like, there is a couple in the show having an emotional journey of dealing with, first of all, the fact that he's in, you know, POW, and then coming home, and then there's this traumatic event, and then things just pile and pile and pile, and they have to take care of Tommy, and that brings their relationship to a head. And then once he breaks out, then he's on his journey, you know, like in the beginning of act two, he's kind of off to his own devices.
Right. We do have those things to follow. They aren't enough of a through line for the whole thing.
Right.
And I think there's an interesting version of this where it is that, right. Where, mm-hmm. you know, we do follow the parents the whole time. Because I feel like, again, like the one original song, I Believe My Eyes, I think it's really, it shows a real strength with like that sort of, so writing a song that is designed to do what it's doing rather mm-hmm. than maybe if you look at it just like this, yeah. then it's kind of like with the like you get with the jukebox musicals or yeah. whatever, it's like, yeah, maybe, okay. But what if she was the queen of dancing? We could say that she's like a queen of dancing. Yes, exactly. All right, here we go.
And
you get it.
Yeah, you get it. You just needed enough for the lead right. to the start to push play.
Give me That's the first few measures. I also love Mamma Mia. I'm not criticizing Mamma Mia.
Well, you can love stuff and criticize at the same time.
Listen, if it's a good jukebox musical, mm-hmm. which I don't classify this as that, but it's in the neighborhood. It's
in the vicinity. They don't bring in any other Who songs. True. Which is interesting choice, because another, like, if this show, I think, had been done 10 years later, it would have had, you know, Baba O'Reilly, and it would have had, you know,
100%.
What's it called? Won't Get Fooled Again. Like, they would be in there somewhere.
And listen, we can sit here and pretend like that wouldn't kind of kick ass.
Wouldn't kind of roll.
Like,
right. Yeah.
Kind of roll. Yeah. It would actually be pretty good. Yeah. You just put,
as I say
more,
it out there. Yeah.
It's like, you're imagining Baba
I
O'Reilly,
sold it
like,
to myself.
Oh, I mean,
yeah.
I'll get super pumped if act two starts with. I'm running in from the concessions. I didn't get my popcorn. I don't care.
Yeah, but this is much more of a contained thing that is adapted.
This is a contained thing. It's not a jukebox. But like, if it's a good one, I can get into it and appreciate it for being fun.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I've ever fallen asleep with is Smokey Joe's Cafe.
Wow.
I actually saw
yeah.
that one on Broadway, right?
Did you really?
Because we took a class trip.
To see Smokey Joe's Cafe?
Not me, Patrick. I didn't choose to go see what is it, Liebert and Stoller?
Liebert and Stoller's jukebox from like 96 or something.
Yeah, no. Yeah. The one with zero cultural footprint whatsoever, no.
Gosh.
I did not choose to see that. I went and saw that, and Rent is what my high school went
to. Oh, well,
you saw
Rent. Okay.
I saw Rent. Yes, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Okay. I saw Rent and as like a high school trip. We went to New York. So I saw Rent and Smokey Joe's Cafe. Not thrilled about Smokey Joe's Cafe. Did not enjoy any of the songs in that.
No. Well, no. It's not really. Yeah. I mean, yes. And my dislike for Jersey Boys on this podcast is well documented. But I would
never in a million frigging the extent to which I would never Million Dollar Quartet, Journey Boys. Mm-hmm. Like, no way.
Yeah.
That music sucks anyway.
I don't. That's my honest thing is I am just not a fan of that style and that era of music. It's just not.
I would rather die than watch that whole thing for 2 hours. Are you kidding me?
I have a friend I went to college with who performed in that show 2,000 times on the road, something like that. And I was just really like, I get you got to work. And I get like you get into a show and you're just like always on the road company with it and whatever. But like I would do that with Cats 1,000 times over before I did it with Jersey Boys.
No kidding. Yeah, of course. Yeah,
I mean, really,
Cats
like
is
just
awesome.
Yeah, but it's like it's so Jersey Boys is so flat to me. I can't like,
you know,
but, I
man,
mean,
you know, Patrick, when you first sit down to get a tattoo, someone is repeatedly jamming a needle into your arm over and over again 1,000 times. And then after 20 minutes, you're like, eh, what can you do? You know, like if you can get through getting a tattoo, you can get through.
You can get through Jersey Boys.
God. That may not even be one of those freaking songs.
It is. I know it is. I'm not going to look it up. We're just going to say that it is.
Me. God, I would rather watch a show about Bowser from Sha-na-na. Not in a million years.
Well, because you know that guy's got a story. That's the other thing.
He seems fun.
Yeah, right? I mean, he took a big swing and it seemed to work out for him. I'm interested how that guy got. We don't have to listen to the music, but, you know, we can get where we're going. But it is, it's also interesting you said that, like, you were kind of on your own with Tommy as a theater kid. I remember that being the way Tommy was in the one person in my group of friends who did community theater who was a huge fan of Tommy, was also the only kid who didn't like musicals.
Right.
He did not listen to musicals. He liked Pulp Fiction, and he liked very serious off Broadway plays that he pretended he saw. And he loved, and he was a very good actor, so like we let him get away with it, but you know, he had that charisma. But he loved Tommy, and he just absolutely, he went up to New York to see it. He talked about it. He started a correspondence with the actor who played Uncle Ernie because he thought he was great. Like he was that kind of guy, you know. And
all right.
Yeah, and I was really fun because I wanted to listen to it or something. I wanted to borrow it from somebody. I was like, "Who has Tommy?" Or you know, and they were like, "Well, he does." I was like, "Oh, God!" The last human I would have asked in the room is the one who like, and he loved it. He would talk about it endlessly. He's like, "Oh, it's a fantastic show and all the music and stuff." I was like, "All right, I guess you know," but it does exist on that line a little bit of music theater knowledge where it's not a full tilt musical theater show for music theater people, I think, in that vein, which plays out in the Tonys that year, I think, where it loses Best Musical to Kiss the Spider Woman, which is a very good show. But it also ties Best Score for the only time that ever happened. Yeah.
Wow, cool.
Which is a weird kind of moment. It still wins like a bunch of design awards and Best Directing of a Musical and stuff like that. But it is, you know, Pete Townsend ties with Candor and Ebb for Best Score that year, which just feels, ties are always kind of weird vibes in awards of this.
Oh, listen, all awards are pretty much nonsensical, right?
Well, sure.
I think a tie is nice because it highlights what a nothing burger these awards are.
Oh, it just doesn't. It just isn't.
Yeah, sometimes it works out like that because it's all made up. I don't know what to say.
Well, it is all, I mean, that is the important, obviously, the truth you learn eventually as you're older. But it is still when you're a kid, you know, 13, watching the Tonys on TV. Like, that's pretty, like, that moment stood out to me pretty far.
I think I'm still raw about Greta Gerwig and Margot Robbie. And I think it's really soured me on the entire idea of awards lately.
Yeah, well, awards are tough because they don't mean anything and they mean everything all at the same time.
I will say, just from my own personal journey, I absolutely think the Tonys serve a very valuable purpose in exposing and putting theater on TV in a way that, like, I've struggled to, like, sort of champion in as much as I can on freaking Twitter or whatever back in the day of, like, accessibility for shows where, like, people growing up in the areas that I, like, there's shows that I love, I think, that I have never, like, been able to see. And that's like a 43-year-old man who's traveled a lot and you know, has a house and my own money and everything. It just
and friends in the industry. I mean, you have connections
exactly.
And all,
like,
that. And it's still like,
It's weird. Like, so like that accessibility, having it on TV so people can, like, at least see and get a sample of something, I think is, like, invaluable. So my gripes about awards being silly aside, I think that is a really valuable service.
It does really serve. No, I think you're, I completely agree. I think the Tonys serve a very valuable
even now.
To
I mean, even now, oh, I that yeah. is how I, you know, find, I will see stuff that I hadn't heard about before.
Yeah, I get my gripe with the Tonys always become how they handle the plays, because they used to do scenes from the plays, which is not great, obviously. But like,
we even saying it, you
you feel it, right?
Boring.
But because
the end
of
those was always freaking great, though. The idea that the like scene just stops and the audience is like, I guess that's all the acting. All right. Woohoo!
But it's why we have legal footage of like James Earl Jones and Fences and Ron Liebman and Angels in America. Like they did it one year, the Tonys, where they had the playwrights come out on stage and summarize their play. And I was just like, as a playwright, I like, this would kill me. This would absolutely
so get
kill
this.
Like, right. Yeah. But like, I don't want it. Like, the one thing writers hate to do more than anything in the world is summarize what they wrote. Like, they want you to see it or read it. They don't want it to be like, well, basically it's about this guy. And, you know,
and it turns out they're twins. I don't know. It's called Twins.
But get this, we find that out early. And then
that's early.
Like,
you think there's a lot more.
That's
here.
Not the big reveal, right? They're looking for their mom. It's very complicated. And one of them can't say neighbor, and it's really, really confusing. we got to the end of that Super Bowl commercial, and my daughter looked at me and who is six, and she was just like, what was that? Like, she really had a very much like, what, because it was so long. She was like, it must be something.
So long. I started to have a little bit of an episode like, is there a gag I'm missing?
Yeah.
Because they're right now pretend like we've all had fun pretending accents don't exist, but we know they do.
Yeah.
Right? We know they do. And you know what he sounded like when you hired him for the commercial. So even the premise of it is maddening. But then for it to continue for, by my recollection, 13 and a half minutes it's just uncalled for.
Yeah.
We're talking about, by the way, history. Yeah. As you've turned your eye back to us, and this has been lost in time, we're talking about a State Farm ad from the 2024 Super Bowl.
Right. With Arnold Schwarzenegger and eventually Danny DeVito, and the joke reveals itself. Like,
the
such as it is. Yes.
Joke,
the
such punch, as it is.
Yes, such
yes,
as it
right.
is. Yes.
I told that ad verbatim to my little brother Griffin, who didn't watch it, and he said, so why didn't they just hire Danny DeVito at the beginning? They knew about him. It's like, yes, man, even in premise, the premise even in the abstract, the premise doesn't hold up.
Oh, man, how do we get to the Super Bowl? Oh, twins. We're talking about twins.
Yeah.
I mean, it is, yes, awards serve a very important function in every sort of entertainment industry to a certain extent. Obviously, there's lots of different awards you can argue with. But I think the importance of the Tonys is well regarded. But it does have, I wonder how you feel about this effect. I had a friend who does a lot of theater in Los Angeles. And one of her things is she sort of understands, but also kind of resents the fact that New York theater is held up as the, like, that's where all the theater that matters goes on, when there's professional and theater, you know, spread throughout the country. And she refers to the Tonys as New York theater's local theater, New York City's local theater awards, which is true, you know, to a certain extent. But, you know, she and I have had this discussion before where I'm like, well, it's got to congregate somewhere to get the word out. Like, we have to have an agreed upon nexus. And she sort of says why. And then we discuss that, you know, endlessly as well. But as somebody who's from, you know, a part of the country, like you say, that doesn't get a lot of theater, do you ever feel that like the sort of dismissive, like, well, if it's not New York, it's not happening. It's not for real. Does that resonate?
You know, we called it the 500. My dad calls it the 500 mile rule. And it's this idea that, like, if someone comes from more than 500 miles away, they're an expert. And I think that definitely, like, that is in a small town. Like, we're like, if you're from far away, we assume it's better. So for us, like, we had, there's always been regional theater and community theater of people like performing around. But there wasn't even the vocabulary, I think, is the problem. And you know, not just the vocabulary, but finding shows, it's really more like, I think what people miss is after, we'll use SpongeBob as an example, right? SpongeBob, I saw SpongeBob the musical because I had like a layover in New York, and I had an early flight the next day. I needed something to do. And I know I love They Might Be Trying to Save a Song, and then Jonathan Colton I know, and he did some of the music, so I went and saw it, and I loved it, right? And I took that love, and I watched it over and over again, and when I had the opportunity to direct something with my wife, we had watched the televised version of SpongeBob that they did during COVID, or it was like released during COVID, filmed earlier. Mm-hmm. We had been watching it obsessively. And we were like, okay, we should do this show. It's available. We should do it. And that is the continued story of this show. And maybe us doing it will lead to other people doing it, whatever. And it maybe gets a foothold. Mm-hmm. But if a show is just contained to the people that get to see it in New York, it dies there, right? Mm-hmm. Like it dies at that point. Like if you don't have a Hamilton that people can watch on Disney Plus, was that like as good as seeing it live? Well, no, but it's a version of it. Like mm-hmm. people can be exposed to it and get to enjoy it. And like, I think if you don't have that, then the cultural permanent, like what you have is theater organizations like mine where, or in states like mine, where, okay, we'll just do My Fair Lady again. Mm-hmm. We'll just do Carousel again. We'll just do Guys and Dolls again because people know it, right? Because because it has the legacy, it has the foothold. And new stuff that has something to say has a much harder time getting a foothold because no one can be exposed to it.
Well, even older stuff that has something to say that never got there in the first place. Yeah, like, for sure. Those musicals are from the 50s and 40s. Right. And it's like, that is it is still, when you think of musicals, it's still Brigadoon and My Friend, like those are the ones that come up. Because that was when musicals were at their absolute most nationally popular. I mean, that's when Billboard charts were full of cast albums.
And are arguably the most boringest. I mean, like, let's listen, there's a lot of clunker.
There really are. That did incredibly well. There's a lot of shows out there that were huge that are
Really staying in my lane on this show, Patrick, because honestly, man, you get me too far off into certain decades of theater and I would just lay waste. Like, there's a lot of pretty famous teams of two dudes making really old great musicals where I'm like, let's not get into it. I don't think I'm going to win any friends.
Well, but a big thing for me is always that, like, you know, like what you like and don't like what you don't like. There's no like canon you have to enjoy, because I really think, like you were saying, it's the art form to me that is that's the thing that I love. And I think if you can't make fun of the ones that you don't like, you can't praise the ones that you love to pieces. Like, I don't have to, you know, like every single thing that I saw. And you know, just because I criticize something doesn't mean that it's not worthwhile. You know, you can objectively think Cats is absolutely absurd and still think it's like, and maybe not even good, but like, it still serves a purpose. It still has,
Cats is absurd, you're a joke of a human. If you love it or don't, that's fine. Right. But if you approach that show as like a man, it's like, for me, Cats is like eating wasabi, baby. Like, yeah, I know it's spicy. I know. It tastes bad to eat it, and I feel alive.
Clears the sinuses. It serves a purpose.
Right? Woo! Skimble shanks! I'm alive! Woo! That is bold.
There you go. I've never heard it compared that way, but I love that. We should try to create the other side of that analogy. Cats is to wasabi. That's what Starlight Express is to God knows what.
How about Usher doing?
Well, right, another ship doing Starlight
Express. Yeah. Doing Starlight. I'm the only person in my. This is how you know you're.
Were you door. Really? Oh wow!
I'm the only person in my room full of watching the Super Bowl where I'm like up off my feet, like, y'all. Is no one else seeing this? The man's doing Starlight Express for everybody. We're not getting it. Even like this, like pseudo armor he's wearing.
Yeah,
it feels like a cool new interpretation of Starlight Express. Please.
Yeah, absolutely. First thought a lot of people I know had was, now he's doing Starlight Express. Fantastic. I'm here for it. And then everybody struggled to come up with a song to sing from Starlight Express that wasn't Starlight Express, because. It's a down. You want to sing an up tempo one, but that's a down tempo one you want to hit. But nobody remembers "I Am the Starlight." People don't actually know the words.
No.
Yeah. The Starlight Express is a great example of a show that's a reference point for a lot of people that I think most people haven't actually listened to a whole
Here's the thing.
bunch.
Starlight Express, you
Right?
must confess. Are you real? Yes or no? That's it.
That's it?
That's all
That's all
anybody
you get.
Has to legally know.
And then, well, it's what happens when Andrew Lloyd Webber wants to do a Thomas the Tank Engine musical and they don't give him the rights. We end up with Starlight
Yeah.
Express.
There you go.
These are good stories in the entire world. So when you revisit Tommy sort of now, has it changed or gotten weirder for you or better or more nostalgic? Where does it live for you kind of now?
Oh, it absolutely. It was really a treat to, I don't listen to a lot of music independently anymore. I tend like more podcasts and audiobooks, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So turning this back on was like an absolute time capsule. It really took me back. I guess I'm impressed by how sort of like, it still feels so vibrant, or like immediate.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like
mm-hmm.
the entire show. I mean, from the beginning where you get that and like that in Pinball Wizard, right?
Mm-hmm.
It feels like it's trying to hold on. Like mm-hmm. it feels like the pace is trying to get away from it. It has that rock feeling of like, oh my God, the drummer in that thing you do when Tom Everett Scott is like picks up the pace like twice as fast.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's like, okay, everybody go. This is the pace we're working at. And the whole show feels like that. Like it is mm-hmm. careening. And then that still lands. I think it does not feel sleepy at all.
No, certainly not. And it does crescendo to a really interesting finale. I mean, We're Not Gonna Take It has a real like you say, the drums are out of control and the thing is just flying off the handle at the end.
Yeah. It's layers and layers and layers and layers. Yeah.
Yeah. And it also has I think that the finale has a maturity to it that is interestingly absent, not absent from the concept album, but is sort of like, I mean, I don't know, in the concept album, apparently the conceit is that Tommy tries to get everybody to join his religion and everyone kind of rejects him. And at the end of the stage show, it's turned around the other way, which feels a little more realistic to me, that they want the Sally Simpson character comes on stage and like wants an answer from him of like, how can we like live our lives? And he's like, no, that's, you've missed the point. And he sort of rejects them and they then reject him in turn. And he's left with his family singing, listening to you.
Maybe there's something there without, I'm at the risk of overanalyzing. There is maybe something there that is parallel to what we've been talking about with the show not necessarily having a message or Tommy himself. Like we, the audience, have been in the same, they're sort of surrogate for us, like looking to Tommy for meaning or instruction or insight or what do we take away from this? And the show sort of has the same message as he does, which is like, what do you want from me? Like, I got really good at pinball. Like, what do you want?
Yeah.
Like that's what happened. That's the story. And I don't have anything else to offer you.
Yeah.
So maybe that parallel kind of works in its favor.
Yeah, I might. I like that. You can't overanalyze things on this show. By the way, we go as deep as we can go. And if we find nothing there, that's fine. We just turn around and come back again. It's just not a big deal. Justin, this has been great talking to you about this. I have to ask before we wrap up, though, what is your favorite song from Tommy?
My favorite song from Tommy is Pinball Wizard. My favorite song from The Who's Tommy
Cool,
is I Believe My Own Eyes.
Yes, okay.
That is the one that I've listened to just as much. Yeah, that's gonna be my answer. I really I love that song. Well, it's hard to separate it too because it is the one like that is specific to this.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know.
Sure.
That's up there. It's definitely. Yeah, that's it.
That's the one.
That's it.
There you go. Good answer. Yeah. No. Justin, this is great. So everybody can find your plethora of online stuff at the McElroy.family. Is that the best
place?
That's
it. That's the address.
Best place to
go there and you can find all our shows and all of it. We do a lot of different podcasts. None of them are about theater, but you're welcome to listen.
And yet theater comes up in all the ones I listen to. So that it pops up all the time.
Yeah.
So great, Justin. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you, Patrick. Thanks for having me.
This can't continue. It makes no sense. We're getting nowhere. I've lost all my confidence. The boy wants something. I'm satisfied. He needs attention and care our love can't provide. And then there's the matter of us. I'd like to prove that I don't think that you've seen the best of me. I've stood up for the boy, and I've clung to the hopes and the lies. I wish that the pain in your gaze could again be a test of me. But when I look in the mirror, I believe my own eyes. I believe my own eyes. Now I've come to the end. All my patience is gone. When I'm doubtful, I tend to believe my own eyes.
The original cast is produced and edited by me, Patrick Flynn. Please rate and review the original cast on your podcatcher of choice. It's the easiest way to help other listeners find the show. Go to bit.ly/originalcaststore for original cast merchandise like t-shirts, tote bags, and more. Become a patron of the original cast at patreon.com/originalcastpod so you can listen to our bonus podcast, The Original Cast at the Movies. On the socials, we're at originalcastpod. Special thanks to our social media manager, Bethany Zalecki.
Hi, Bethany. Bethany, hi. It's Justin McElroy. I just wanted to say hello to you, Bethany, the social media manager. I hope you're having a killer day.
My thanks to Justin McElroy for coming and talking to me. I'm Patrick Flynn, and I can't. I have rehearsal.
I'd like to believe that I don't feel that we've seen the best of us. And the way to believe is to see where the real future lies. The pain in your gaze can again be a test of us. And when I look in the mirror, I believe my own eyes. Let's believe our own eyes. Though we've come to the end, all our patience is gone. Let's admit we intend to believe our own eyes.
To believe our own eyes.
Tommy? 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 Tommy?